And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, March 3rd. And temperatures outside pretty nice, in the 40s. And we'll take it. This will be the nicest day of the week. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, who is on the road again. She's out at the Commodities Classic out in Denver, where they're bracing for a major storm out there as well.
Hey, don't say major. We got a lot of equipment to get out of here tomorrow afternoon. What are you talking about?
You might have a little trouble tomorrow afternoon. Might have to wait till tomorrow night. But
fair enough.
Yeah, there is a major storm system that's going to be developing here over the next 24 hours, bringing everything from tornadoes for the southern plains to blizzard conditions from the Rockies eastward through the central plains. And it's been a number of years, Bridget, since I've seen a storm this intense. Good thing it's not a slow mover. It'll be a real quick mover. But sustained winds in part of the central plains with this, 50 to 70, that's sustained, not gusts, 50 to 70 mile an hour sustained winds with heavy snow. Unbelievable. So, yeah, travel through the central plains tomorrow evening. And tomorrow night is going to be next to impossible in some areas. So if you have any travel plans going south into the central plains late in the day tomorrow night, you might want to rethink that and kind of alter your plans as, yeah, a very, very intense system. And luckily, we're on the northern end of that here in the FM area. We're just looking at, basically.
Here's Bridget in her blender. Glad she could make it.
Well, that's the wrong one, but...
That's the wrong weather sounder.
That's just Bridget and her blender. But we are looking at pretty decent conditions for today. Nicest day of the week with temperatures in the low 50s and light winds. And then as we head into tonight, winds shift to the north, about 10 to 25. We drag in some colder weather. We'll drop down to about freezing. And then as we head into your Tuesday, we'll see some snow showers in the morning. Winds ramp up as that system intensifies to our south. Our winds will be out of the north tomorrow at about 20 to 35 and gusty. And highs in the mid-30s. Again, any snow we get will be in the morning. It'll be light in terms of accumulations. It'll be less than a half inch. But when you combine that with 30-mile-an-hour winds in the morning, your morning commute could have a little bit of reduced visibility, maybe a scattered slippery spot or two. But we're not dealing with anything in terms of any big snows or anything like that up here. So that's good news there.
Great. Clean that all up. I'll be home Wednesday. Thanks.
We'll be fine by Wednesday.
So meanwhile, as Dean said, I'm here at Commodity Classic in Denver. Commodity Classic is where, in particular, the corn, the soybean, and the sorghum growers come together, as well as National Wheat Growers Association. And they get ready to take legislation to Washington. They have a chance to do a lot of their policy discussions. Also, it's a huge trade show. There's probably about 8,500, 9,000 people here. And I'm joined in a Fendt tractor today by Daniel Smith. He is a strategic marketing manager for Fendt Tractors. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bridget. I'm pleased to be here in the cab of a Fendt 942 tractor.
So this 942, yep. This is the 900 series. Is this the largest series Fendt, or what are we looking at here?
Yeah, so no, actually, this is not the largest series Fendt. When we're talking wheel tractors, we actually have the 1000 series, which is actually even a larger series of tractor. So I would say, you know, a lot of people that are most commonly familiar with, you know, John Deere or Case machines, this would be kind of equivalent to like an 8R or a Magna machine. So
okay, that gives it a little bit of perspective.
Yeah,
exactly. But now, as I was reading some of the stats that are on this particular tractor, mm-hmm. I saw some things that I made notes on. Okay. One of them was the driver's workstation has an ID low-speed concept.
Yep.
What is that, and why is that important?
Yes, what this machine does is it actually uses the engine and the transmission, and there's enough smarts between those two that we can actually reduce the engine speed as much as possible to get the job done. So, you know, you kind of think about when you're driving down the interstate in your car, when you kind of hit that overdrive gear, you know, the engine speed drops down a little bit. Mm-hmm. The reason you're getting that, or you want that, is because you get increased fuel mileage. The exact same concept for us. So when we have the hydraulic consumers or a PTO consumer, we match what's needed from that implement or our ground speed as well. But then whatever we produce extra, we actually drop the engine speed so we can get that maximum fuel efficiency. So you can get more acres per gallon covered.
Well, okay. So efficiency makes sense.
Yep.
Is that a requirement because of DEF? And we have so much more with the DEF, the diesel emissions situation, or is that completely secondary?
I would say it's secondary, but of course any farm producer out there wants to kind of keep an eye on that total fluid efficiency and how much DEF or diesel he's putting in the machine. So every little bit definitely adds up. I would say it's definitely secondary, but okay. they're interrelated in kind of an agronomics aspect for sure.
One other question about this particular machine as well. I read something about two hydraulic pumps.
Yep.
So why does that matter? Now, I want you to put this in perspective. You're talking about a kid who grew up on a family farm, and I spent most of my life in a 1066 IH.
Okay,
So why would I need two hydraulic pumps now?
So there's a couple reasons for that. The first is, okay, one individual pump probably isn't going to make as much hydraulic fluid as, you know, required by some of these large, large implements that have huge, huge hydraulic demands these days.
Okay.
So we add another pump on to make sure that we can make up for that deficit that one pump would not be able to handle. So that's the first thing. Basically, just diversifying where this flow comes from to produce what's needed for the implement.
Okay.
Now, the second better benefit of this is we have one pump dedicated to one side of the cylinder of the SCV bank and one to the other side. So what we can do now is we can actually split the consumers on like a planter, let's say, where we have our high flow, low pressure consumers.
Okay.
We can have those on one side, and then we can have our high pressure, low flow consumers on the other.
Okay.
And so what that actually allows us to do is to actually produce only the hydraulic fluid output from those pumps that's needed. So we're not basically making extra hydraulic fluid flow from the machine that's not needed and just going to be wasted. So what that's going to do is heat emissions and heat, you know, generation. And anytime you can reduce heat generation, that's going to increase your fuel efficiency. It's going to make this machine last much, much longer.
Right.
And it's going to actually just make your implement perform better as well. So tons and tons of benefits from that.
Okay, that's a great point. Now, I'm going to maybe jump the shark a little bit because there is this incredibly bright, shiny...
elephant in the room.
There's elephant in the booth.
Yeah.
And so, Addison, I sent you a picture of a gold Fendt tractor, not its usual green uniform or livery, as it might be called. So that gold Fendt, why is it gold, Daniel?
Yeah, so... first and foremost, it's a conversation starter for sure. But one of the things that the Fendt brand is most proud of is our customer care program that we call Gold Star.
Okay.
So Gold Star, gold tractor with a big gold star right next to it. So what that is actually, it's actually, you know, most people call it a warranty, but it's much, much beyond a warranty. So it's going to be a 3,000 three-year warranty, whichever comes first on a tractor. And then the benefit of that also is that we're actually going to do all the maintenance. So dealers are going to come out to your farm and service your machine during that three-year period. So basically the farmer, all he has to do is be concerned about putting fuel in, DEF in, and somebody in the seat to babysit the machine. That's all he's really concerned about. Everything else is kind of covered for the machine.
Wow.
So in addition to that, we're also going to include Trimblag software as part of the product for that, for some data handling solutions as well. And then there's also a loaner guarantee. So say the off chance that something happens to one of these machines and your dealership's not able to get it going in the first 2 days, they'll actually bring out another machine that's the same size to make sure that you keep going. So we want to just kind of give that peace of mind to the farmer all time.
So before we ask more questions about the service, I heard a rumor that yesterday when Secretary of Ag Brooke Collins was here, or Brooke Rollins, excuse me, Brooke Rollins, I heard she signed that gold tractor.
She signed the front, right by the ladder. So.
Who gets to lease that tractor out? Does this put like extra value on it?
I don't see how it couldn't, right? But, we're going to send this up to Jackson, Minnesota, where this machine is built. This tractor is built and up in Jackson. We're going to have it in our visitor center there for a period of time.
Okay.
So anybody that wants to see the gold tractor can definitely stop by Jackson, Minnesota. Not terribly far from your part of the world.
It's not far from our
Swing by there, you can kind of see the booth, and you can actually set up for tours as well if you want to go see where these track tractors and the Rogators are built in Jackson, Minnesota. So we'll let it sit there for a little bit. We'll take it to Farm Progress, and then we'll decide what we want to do with it after that point.
So I would be the I don't know enough about equipment, except I'm very dangerous, and I would be the geek who says, yeah, sign me up for that tour. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Dean, that could be a field trip. I'll take you on. How's that?
Addison and I were just saying the same thing. That sounds like a pretty good field trip. Hey, Dan, got a question for you. With everything kind of going towards more environmentally sound, at least we're, you know, a lot of industries are trying to. What do you see down the line for electric tractors from Fendt, or maybe even solar powered?
Yeah. Solar powered is a little bit different, but definitely we're focusing on an electric tractor as well. I think a big kind of misnomer is that we're going to be able to have tractors like we're sitting in here that are an electric tractor.
Yeah, no
that's
way.
That's something that's just not going to be feasible.
Yeah.
You know, I think we did a study that to get the same horsepower or equivalent, operational equivalent of a 1000 series for an electric tractor, we would have to haul around a 30-ton battery just to kind of get through the day. So that's of course, just not feasible.
Yeah.
But now what we are focused on is smaller electric tractors. So we're going to actually be introducing here relatively soon, you know, a 70 horsepower equivalent electric tractor, of which has been launched in Europe and is very well accepted there. But yes, we're starting to see that some of that from a smaller tractor perspective. But when you get to that kind of mid-level horsepower perspective, we're actually focusing mostly on hydrogen. So we get a little bit more bang for our buck. We can get a little bit more energy reserve out of what we have for the tanks there. And we can still have that very, very clean emissions, you know, basically water output from the tailpipe from hydrogen power. And that's kind of the track that we're taking for our, you know, more sustainability kind of minded customers.
Nice.
These are the fun questions we get to ask from the people who work with these products every single day. And they see them from the ground up and from plants through the factory, the whole nine yards. But there's one other item here in the booth for AGCO that is not actually a tractor, and it's this service pickup. So, Addison, if you could bring that picture up as well. Does this tie in with your gold standard service? How does that work,
Dan? Yep, it ties directly into Gold Star. So what we're doing now is we're kind of shifting from this, you know, standard brick and mortar where, you know, 20, 30 years ago, everything that you went for the farm, for your piece of equipment, you had to go to the dealership to get, you know, your parts, your service, you had to take the tractor in, all of those kind of aspects, you had to go to the dealership.
Okay.
We're shifting that mentality and now saying, hey, we're going to bring all the best parts of the dealership that you need on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. We're going to bring that to your farm to make it much, much easier. So I kind of akin this mostly to, I don't know how you did your Black Friday shopping, but I did a ton of Amazon shopping. I did not go to the mall this last year.
Fair enough.
Went to Amazon. So we're bringing much, much more kind of a digital aspect to farming and taking care of your machinery and all those kind of aspects. We're bringing that more to, you know, your phone and to your farm as opposed to you coming to our brick and mortar location. So not only is there going to, we're still going to have brick and mortar stores, don't get me wrong, but those are going to be kind of like sales and like event centers and that kind of stuff. And then we're going to go to kind of like a hub and spoke model where, okay, you might have one central dealership and that might be 75, 80 miles away from where your customer's at.
Yep.
But we're going to have something in between that's going to be kind of like a parts depot that we can run parts to as needed. Or from that hub or that spoke, sorry, we can actually run that out to the customer much, much more quickly. So developing a much, much larger network that can actually kind of touch base with all of our customers, even if they're not close to that central hub. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So many cool things happening here at Commodity Classic. There's lots to see and lots more to talk about. But first things first, we've got to check markets with Northern Ag Network, or excuse me, American Ag Network. Once we get done with markets, we come back with Alaska's only dairy farmer. That is Scott Flaggerman. We're going to visit him. And then, you just never know. I took a ton of pictures and video today that Addison's going to show in the live stream, and we'll share all that when we come back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, where I get to spend my day at Commodity Classic here in Denver. Currently an event tractor, had a great time talking with Daniel Smith. And Daniel is a strategic marketing manager for Fendt Tractors. And he knows a lot more about this machine than I do. I know just enough in here to be dangerous. And as I was setting up, he was moving things around and touching all the buttons that I won't, because that would be dangerous. So, better yet, we brought a guest in today that has a little less danger in his life, or so we think. And joining us today is Scott Flaggerman. Scott is with an Arizona dairy farm. Scott, how are you today?
Doing good. How are you?
We're great. So, as a dairy farmer's daughter, I have a lot of questions, such as, tell me about the dairy business in Alaska, because I didn't think about it. But yes, there likely would have to be a dairy farm in Alaska. Are you the only one?
We are currently the only grade A dairy in Alaska. There's quite a few, oh, I guess I'd call them backyard cows, but as far as a legal sale grade A dairy, we're the only one.
All right, Scott. When you say grade A, can you explain that? Because not all of our listeners might be familiar with what that means in the dairy business.
To sell milk legally or in stores or whatever, you have to be certified and inspected. And so grade A is what they call the level of inspection to be certified for sale for the processing plant and the dairy.
And Scott, we've got a question from one of our listeners just emailed asking, since this is in Alaska, is this mostly indoors? And I'm guessing they're asking that due to the nature of the cold weather up there.
Yeah, our cows are kept in. We have basic freestall style barn and very well insulated. About the end of September, we kind of close everything up. So everything's insulated good. You have to build very well to handle the climate here. All the concrete, all the slabs and alleys all have in-floor radiant heat in them, just in case it gets super cold. Typically, the cows will keep the barn above freezing, and if it can't, then we'll turn on the floor heat.
Okay, hold on here. Where exactly in Alaska are you, Scott? And then tell us about the weather, generally speaking, because I don't think you're freezing all the time, right?
No, we're in Delta Junction, which is about 100 miles from Fairbanks. So we're up in the interior. We're not by the coast. So it's a lot colder, drier climate here. In summers, we can get quite warm. We can have 80s and 90s in the summer. For a pretty short period. Basically, we have about a 90-day growing season at best. In the winters, we can get snow mid-September, late September, and it won't leave till April or 1st of May. So we can get into this winter's been a nice mild winter, but we've been down to 68 below. It's the coldest I've seen. Typically, that doesn't last a long time, but it can be below zero for months straight.
Okay.
It's a fairly
below zero for months straight.
Yeah.
Keep going.
We don't get a lot of snow here typically. Every year is a little different, but we might get a couple feet, 4 feet. Sporadic throughout the winter. It's a dry climate. About 12 inches annual rainfall, which includes the snow, is all we get here. So we do have a center pivot irrigation. We have 5 pivots on our fields that we irrigate with in the summer. We do grow all our own feed. It's too expensive to ship anything in. So it's mostly grass hay, haylage, timothy and brome is what seems to survive through the winters here. For grain, we grow our own barley and yellow field peas, and we grind that, and that's our grain ration, and we put the minerals in with it.
Wow. Okay, I got lots of questions here. When are you... do you try to cycle it up so that you're not calving at the coldest time of the year? Because normally with dairy cattle, calves can come at any point in time. But how are you balancing that out?
Yeah, we calve year-round. You kind of have to with dairy, especially when you're processing your own. You need a very steady milk supply. So we do calve year-round. The dry cows are kept in with the milk cows in the climate-controlled barn. And then we have a fairly large maternity pen that we can just keep an eye on them. And it's never above freezing there. If it's on the cold side, we'll blanket the calves when they're born. But for the most part, it's very dry, so they do well. Springing heifers, we'll bring them into the barn, try to at least a month prior to calving so they climatize to the barn. And go from there. The difficulties is moving animals out of a climate-controlled barn to a non-climate-controlled that can be a little dangerous. We try and time it with warmer spells.
Well, I understand that. I really wouldn't want you to drag me outside in that cold either, Scott. I'll be honest with you. So, Scott, we've got lots more questions, and we really want to encourage folks who are listening to be able to reach us to ask questions of Scott. And again, you can do that at 701-293-9000. That's our phone number, and you'll find us via ag@flagfamily.com or weather@flagfamily.com. We're currently live streaming on YouTube, Facebook, and Acres TV, where you can catch whatever might be going on video around us. But we've got more to come when we talk, as we talk to Scott. And am I getting it right? Plagerman? Am I saying your name right, Scott?
Correct. Yep.
Plagerman. And he is really the only grade A dairy farmer in the state of Alaska. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, where I'm at Commodity Classic. Dean's in the studio. We have a caller, and then we'll rejoin our guest, Scott Flagerman, a dairy farmer in Alaska. Dean, who do we got?
Well, we got Tom from West Fargo. Tom, what's your question for Bridget?
Yeah, Bridget, say, I heard you earlier with FEMCO or an AGCO, and I actually, it's direct to you or to one of your the people you're going to interview. I know they want to do the hydrogen tractors, but has anyone thought about for something with the northern states with all the natural gas that is available, say in North Dakota and some other states? Can they do anything to accommodate the farmers here with that product?
Tell you what, Tom, I don't know the answer to that question, but because Daniel was just here on air, whoops, holy cow, my whole seat just moved. Wow. because Daniel was just here, and also because I have been in contact with one of their marketing managers who helped get me on the tractor today, I'm going to text them and I'm going to ask them that question. Okay. Hopefully by the end of the hour, I'll have an answer for us. How's that?
Okay. Thank you. That's all I needed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. So, back to our guest today, we have Scott Flagerman with us, and Scott is the only grade A milk dairy farmer in the state of Alaska. And so, Scott, I'm just curious, as far as a breed, are you a Holstein guy, or is there one of the other dairy breeds that's much more acclimated to the weather where you're at?
We have mostly Holstein because we're strictly fluid milk, so we were after higher production, not components. And due to the way we keep them housed, climate controlled through the winter, pretty much any breed is fine here because they're not outside anyway. We do actually have a little brown Swiss few mixes in the herd. They do seem to be a very hardy animal for the winters, and if you were in a situation where they had to be outside more, they might actually do quite well here.
So I know you said you really rely on your own refueling of your herd, if you will, right? You're calving out yourself and going to be using those calves in your herd. What happens if you need to expand and you buy stock, whether it's some Holsteins, somewhere else? Is there a big process if you were buying in Canada and have to bring them in, or if you had to ship more Holsteins up from the state? And how do you get them acclimated to the weather? And maybe those aren't even relevant questions to your operation, but I'm curious.
Yeah, at this point, we're trying to keep a closed herd due to keep diseases, viruses, anything like that out of our barn. We do not vaccinate for anything here. That's one of the selling points of our milk is no vaccinations, and we have very little health issues just due to the clean environment, dry environment. So we're really against bringing in new stock. If we did have to get it from Canada or lower 48, it's very involved with vet work, things like that. It's not very easy to get them through into Alaska. There's very strict rules. So it's hardly feasible to do that. So we're stuck with growing within our own herd. There's really no dairy stock up here to buy to begin with. So we use a lot of sex semen to grow our herd faster.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw the look on Dean's face, and I think he's wondering what you mean by that.
We artificially inseminate everything, and you can purchase semen that is for heifer semen, female semen only. And it's not okay. Always, we've had a few bowls from it, but it's like 95%.
And Scott, you sell local, correct? Just up in your general area in Alaska, or do you sell to the whole state?
We're pretty much all over the whole state on the road system.
Now, is it any more expensive than the milk you'd find down in the lower 48 due to the fact that you don't vaccinate?
Yeah, we cannot produce milk as cheap as it can be mass shipped in. So we needed a more natural, we needed a quality special product to justify a higher price, or just due to cost of production. So our milk is a little different than typical grocery store milk. It is vat pasteurized at low temperature. We do not homogenize, and we do not separate any cream off. So it's about as natural as the cow makes it. So that's kind of our selling point, a more cream top, wholesome type milk. I mean, it's essentially as same as raw, as close to raw as you can get. You can't tell the difference.
Hmm. Okay.
We've been told by a lot of people that, for health benefits, they can drink our milk and not have, like lactose issues or digestion issues because it is not homogenized.
Is anyone taking advantage of using your milk to make butter in small quantities, or they're just making sure that this is fluid drinkable milk?
We do hear from several customers that they make butter and stuff at home. Being that it's not homogenized, they can separate the cream off at home. And they make some butters and cheeses with it. Mm. But on a commercial scale, no.
So can I ask how much milk you're able to produce, like maybe on a per week basis? Because I'm just curious how many you give milk to.
We're about 500-600 gallons a day is what we're producing. We milk 60 to 70 cows.
Wow. Okay, got it.
Growing.
Literally growing. So the winter months, or Dean, unless you wanted to ask that question, because that's one that's in my head.
No, go ahead, Bridget.
Okay, when down here, we're probably terrible at really good geography when it comes to Alaska and the Canadian provinces. For those days of the winter that are so much longer of dark hours than light, does that affect you where you're at, and does it impact your milk production at all?
No, it doesn't really affect the production at all. We have lights on timers in the barn, so we try and mimic typical daylight, 12 on, 12 off, somewhere in there. And with the climate control, we really don't see an effect on production at all. We still get, the shortest day. We get 4 or 5 hours of usable daylight. So we just plan accordingly. We'll work in the barn or in the shop or whatever during the dark hours and plan our outside stuff for midday. And typically it's clear and sunny, so it's a might be shorter time, but it's a nice bright day yet.
These cows seem to have it made better up there than they do down here, it sounds like, Bridget.
they probably do. Yep. Well, yeah, they don't know any different.
Dairy cows are the most pampered. Dairy cows are just a pampered animal in the barnyard, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, Scott. I like it. Yeah.
When the young stock, once they're about 8 months old, they go to a different barn, and it's they're inside, they're dry, and a straw bedding pack, but it's not heated. So they can handle the cold as long as they're dry and out of the wind. and then a month or two prior to calving is we'll bring them back in.
Okay, this is more of a functionality of a dairy farm question, but I heard you say that you can have snow on the ground from mid-September until even the 1st of May, and likely some pretty cold spells. So how do you get rid of manure? Because often farmers are tearing apart manure piles and having to spread that out on fields, but that might have to happen a little bit differently in your neighborhood, Scott, or am I completely wrong there?
We handle everything as a liquid or a slurry, basically a free barn type system, and it does not freeze in the barn. So we have Lely Discovery scrapers, automatic robotic scrapers that clean the floors. We have an underground pit under the barn that it goes into that holds 4 or 5 days worth of manure, and then also all the plant water, wash water and stuff goes into that pit. And then when it's full, we have a lagoon that we dug here, and we buried a pipeline. We got a pump by that pit and a pipeline to the lagoon, which is about 8 feet in the ground, insulated with glycol heat running alongside of it. And if we keep it using it often enough, it does not freeze, and we pump into the bottom of the lagoon. So as long as you keep using it, it's not a problem. And then when it lagoon thaws out, which is usually takes till about midsummer, then we can start applying it to the fields.
Interesting. Okay. And with irrigation, you can water that in, etc. So that, because you also said you only have about 12 inches of annual rainfall, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So this leads me to kind of the family history question. Were you an established farm that's multi-generational, and particularly with dairy, or was dairy something new that you chose to start? Because I hear you talking about quite a lot of infrastructure.
Where do I start here? We're originally from Northwest Washington, and we dairied there. My dad dairied there. Family for generations have all been dairymen. So we dairied there, and then in 2008 or 9, due to just way too much regulation on the West Coast, we ended up deciding to sell out because we were a small farm and the regulation was just too much. And the opportunity came up in Alaska here. So I believe it's 2009, we moved to Alaska. We purchased a hay farm. We sold hay to the horse market primarily, boarded horses, and we also raise a couple hundred head of bison. And I believe it was 2020. My older boys got interested in dairying again. So one of the farms we had a smaller barn, 40 by 100. So we decided to just start, see if we could do it. And got a few cows, renovated the barn, and been growing from there. So we started everything. We built everything from scratch ourselves here. There is no construction companies or dairy companies or anything like that. So everything we do here, we build ourselves, from the concrete to the wiring is all do it yourself.
Now, Scott,
so we've been slowly adding on from that point, the original barn. We've tripled the size of that over the last 4 years. And
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Scott, a couple questions for you, and they're kind of on two different subjects. You said you raised bison. What do you do with the bison? And when it comes to for those that don't know, what's the difference in the taste of your milk opposed to the homogenized milk that most people know of in a store?
Typically, our milk is a much creamier milk. If you can see through the side of your glass after you've drank it, it's not real milk. in my opinion. Good non-homogenized full cream milk leaves a good white coating. It's just a richer full flavor, just like the raw milk.
Okay. And your bison, I mean, we're bison country here. What do you do with your bison up north?
We have a little slaughter plant nearby that is a USDA inspected slaughter plant. So typically most of our bison are sold between 2 and 3 year olds. And then we also have our breeding stock cow calf herd. But typically they get used up in the summer for tourist season type. We have a pretty big touristry industry here. So a lot of restaurants mm-hmm. and stuff will purchase locally grown grass-fed bison for that season.
Oh, that's good eating too. Oh, now I'm hungry.
Boy, no kidding. Between the milk and the bison, Scott's got it all covered.
we got to make a road trip, Bridget. I know it's a long ways, but man, that'd be a fun road trip.
Yeah. One of the reasons we have the bison is due to our climate, making feed is very risky here. Weather can change just instantly without warning. So we always end up with some off-grade hay, either got rained on or too wet or who knows what. And there's no market or use for that kind of feed up here. You don't just sell it to a feedlot or for cheap, or there's just no options. So one of the reasons we got the option, the bison, was to use up some lower quality non-dairy or non-horse quality feed. So they're not a huge money maker, but they're recouping some loss and some off-grade hay.
That's an excellent use of your resources. Wow.
Oh, and okay. they're a very hardy animal to be up here in the wintertime. So.
They really are, and they make a great fit for you. And Scott, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Just a plethora of information for us that we had no idea could be possible up there.
Yeah, it's a challenging place. We enjoy a challenge, and this is definitely a challenging place to farm. As far as basically there's no infrastructure here, so there's no equipment dealers, there's nothing like that, so we source everything out of the lower 48. We do all of our own repairs, engines, transmissions, whatever, to construction. You're kind of all on your own here, which is kind of the fun part for me. Anyway, the boys seem to like that too, and this is part of their future. Was one of the reasons we started the dairy, was to keep them involved in agriculture and give them each ownership a part of the farm.
This has been awesome, and I wish everybody there the best of luck for that. And Scott, thanks for joining us today. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the afternoon.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Thanks, Scott. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll recap the weather because there's a major storm system that's going to be affecting parts of the Central Plains. If you have any travel plans going south, we'll detail more on that coming up after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Hey, it's a 1:56 in the afternoon, and temperatures out there in the mid to upper 40s right now. It's a beautiful, beautiful afternoon. Light winds. Boy, today's absolutely the pick day of the week, as we've got a major storm system that is pulling out of the desert southwest. This is going to produce everything from haboobs to blizzard to tornadoes across the southern and central part of the U.S. It's just a dynamic storm. I don't think it's been years since I've seen 50 to 70 mile an hour sustained winds in parts of the central plains. It's just, and that is going to come along with snow too. So if you have any travel plans going south into areas, I think you're okay through most of South Dakota. Once you get towards Sioux Falls, they're going to get hit pretty good. But as you get south of that into areas around Omaha, Des Moines, and south of the Twin Cities, those areas are going to have blizzard conditions as we get into tomorrow, late tomorrow into tomorrow night. So even the Front Range of the Rockies can experience a quick burst of blizzard conditions as this system starts to wind up. For us, though, we'll get the wind out of it, not that strong, but we're not going to get much snow. We're right on the northern end of this system, so we could see a few light snow showers Tuesday morning. Winds will be pretty breezy out of the north, 20 to 35 and gusty, and then cool weather will settle in, but not that cold, really at or above normal, still in the 30s all week long. So all in all, not a bad-looking forecast. We dodge a bullet compared to what they're going to get hit down to the south. Now, I just posted our new LRC calendar online all the way through May now. Just consider that this system right now, we're on about a 38 to 44 day cycle. So let's kind of smack that in the middle. Figure this system will be wrapping back into the Central Plains as we head towards mid-April. Now, odds are that will be north of the current position, with the jet stream lifting north by mid-April. So that may very well be a big precip maker for us. Now, would it be rain or snow? Mid-April, you're leaning more towards rain with snow out in the western part of the state, but it all depended on the track of that storm. So kind of follow that along with us. That should be back around, mid-April. So it's, I think our ag community is going to like what I posted online in terms of moisture. When it comes to moisture this upcoming spring, we've got some really good news in the forecast. So I love being able to tell our ag community that. So for Bridget and myself, we want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.